Named by The Atlantic as one of the 100 most influential figures in American history and by Time and Life magazines as one of the most influential Americans of the 20th century. Ralph Nader has helped us drive safer cars, eat healthier food, breathe better air, drink cleaner water, and work in safer environments for more than four decades. He's the author of a new book, Breaking Through Power, which draws from a lifetime of waging often winning David versus Goliath battles against big corporations and the United States government. He also has another book which comes out on Tuesday entitled Animal Envy, a Parable, which will be published by Seven Stories Press. He also knows a thing or two about running for president of the United States. Ralph Nader is a consumer advocate and author of the new book Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than We Think, and we welcome Ralph Nader back to the roundtable. Sir, it's always a great pleasure and honor to have you on our program.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Very nice to have you. So let me ask you what your take and what you believe our takeaway should be from what happened Tuesday night in the election results.
Well, the first takeaway is that Hillary Clinton won the election. It's going to come in. She's probably going to win the popular vote nationwide by a million. And in most countries, Joe, that's enough. But in our country, it's not enough. And again, second time in 16 years, the Democratic presidential candidate in 2000 was Gore, won the national popular vote, lost the election because of the electoral vote. And we've got to get rid of the electoral college. There has never been a single American voter in this country since the beginning of our history who has ever voted for a presidential candidate. They vote for electors that are on the ballot whose names nobody knows. And it's rather astonishing that the Democrats, who've lost two presidential elections in 16 years, will not come out to repeal or nullify the Electoral College. Now, a constitutional amendment is one way, but there's another underway already. New York State, California, Maryland, and other states have passed laws, Joe, that say that if enough states reflecting 270 electoral votes pass the same laws, they will throw the electoral votes to any presidential candidate who wins the national popular vote, thereby neutralizing the Electoral College even without constitutionally repealing it. And the effort now has reached 165 electoral votes because California, New York, Maryland, and other states have already passed this interstate compact, as it's called. It's been led, the effort, by Stephen Silberstein out of San Francisco. He's a retired entrepreneur who has hired six or seven people to go around to state legislatures to get this effort underway. We are a mockery of the world because we're the only country that presumes to be a democracy where you can win the popular vote and lose the office.
Of course, during the 2000 election, which you were a part of, you were often referred to as a spoiler in that campaign, just as Gary Johnson and Jill Stein are in this campaign, with people fairly or unfairly saying, okay, but if those votes went here, we would have a different result. But we've talked about that many times. I want to specifically talk about what you just mentioned, which is if you have the popular vote, that could allow and make a third party, fourth party, fifth party to be much fairer, right? So that all
That's
of those
right.
parties could be involved, and it's the winner takes, you know, the person who gets the most votes wins.
That's right. You get a competitive election, which is what a democracy should foster. The two major parties don't own all the votes. To use the politically bigoted word that they use, spoiler, for a third party candidate who's honestly campaigning for the votes, is, I think, trying to reduce third party candidates to second class citizenship. But what does this mean now? Hillary doesn't seem to grasp in her concession speech that she won the popular vote. I suppose if she said that, it'd be considered soured grapes. But it isn't. She should have taken that opportunity yesterday to highlight the anti-democratic nature of the Electoral College and call for its repeal or neutralization. Now, Trump, of course, is on his way to Washington to take the office, but he doesn't have a popular vote election. He won the Electoral College. And if I were the Democrats in Congress and Senator Chuck Schumer, I would constantly remind the Trump White House that they didn't win the popular election. And that will further support, it is hoped, Chuck Schumer blocking a lot of these crazy nominations that are being floated around. Secretary of State Newt Gingrich, Attorney General Rudy Giuliani. These should never pass muster, and the Democrats have the votes to block it in the Senate.
I want to get to your book in a moment of breaking through power, but one of the ways, I mean, you're, of course, a consumer advocate and have had great success throughout your career and in decades in doing this. When you see people take to the streets in Washington and Chicago and in Los Angeles and New York after the vote, how do you feel about that? Do you think that's a positive sign? Is that a frustration of an electorate that is energy that is well spent?
Of course, it's a free speech expression of outrage that their candidate who won the popular vote lost the Electoral College and won. And it's obviously outrage against Donald Trump's statements during the campaign, which we don't need to go over. But where's it going? It's going to go into the ether, all that citizen energy on the streets, unless they start raising money for organizers in congressional districts and in Washington. That's what provides the continuity between demonstrations on weekends. And that's what my book is really about. It's more timely than ever. This little paperback called Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than We Think. And I give examples throughout American history where a handful of people representing majority opinion took on power and broke through, starting with the abolition of slavery, women's right to vote, all the changes for farmers and worker protections. And it never takes more than 1%, Joe, of people spending 200 to 300, 400 hours a year linked with one another to make transformational changes if they have what Abraham Lincoln called the public sentiment behind them. And back home, where people live, work, and raise their families, there's huge left-right support for a lot of changes. And I'm not just talking about minimum wage, which should be first up in the new Congress. I'm talking about full Medicare for all with free choice of doctor and hospital, get rid of all this complexity, all these deductibles, all these exclusions, all these above the line, below the line, before you qualify. There's huge support for that, and it's much cheaper as a result in terms of per capita expenditure with better outcomes. I'm talking about a real law and order campaign against corporations who commit crimes. They defraud Medicare. That's $60 billion with a B a year. They are ripping off consumers right and left with these fine print contracts, these charges, these penalties. You have the Wells Fargo, on and on. Just read the Wall Street Journal. You'll see how much corporate crime. It's not much corporate crime law enforcement. That comes in at 80-90%. Breaking up the big banks that are too big to fail, that comes in at 90%. Getting rid of corporate welfare, crony capitalism, handouts, subsidies, bailouts, that comes in huge left-right. So that's what this book is about, is if we get together and basically say, what institution can make these changes? It's the Congress. It's the most powerful branch of government. Okay, what's the Congress? It's just 535 people. We know their names. It's not some faceless giant bureaucracy in the executive branch. It's the Congress that has the taxing power, the spending power, the investigative power, the confirming power, the war power, on and on. And so back home, there's not much organization for these changes. But this book shows that if we develop this concept known as a citizen summons, where left-right people, starting with a few hundred in each state, commit certain amount of hours, raise certain amount of dollars for full-time offices, and then summon the senators and representatives to town meetings that the citizens create to face agendas that the citizens are behind. And let me tell you, when senators and representatives confront left-right in an auditorium, they turn pale because they can't game it. A left-right alliance is politically unbeatable. It doesn't matter who's in Congress right now, who's going to go in Congress next year. That can win again and again. And that's what this little book is all about. And jokingly, I say on my book tour, people should buy a six-pack. They should get six of these little books in order to have neighborhood or living room meetings to get this underway. The citizen summons turns the dynamic completely around from the politicians choreographing and maneuvering the citizens to the citizens recovering the power that they've put in Congress, which Congress has abused, needless to say, and summoning the senators and representatives to these town meetings.
So here's what makes my head hurt, and that is that you look at this book and you look at what you're calling for, which makes so much sense. But you could argue, can't you, that that is what happened Tuesday night, that there were people who were trying to break through the power. We keep on being told that there was an electorate that was mad, there was an electorate that had felt that they were disposed of, that they were flyovers, and they wanted to take back and break through the power. But my God, is this what we had in mind?
It is a breakthrough power, but it's substituting one power for another. I mean, nobody who knows politics can say that breaking through the democratic political establishment, the whole crony capitalism, the Wall Street alliance with the Clintons and all that, is going to be substituted by any kind of democratic power. It's going to be substituted by just shifting positions. The lobbyists in Washington are not worried about a Trump administration. They just are busily now readjusting their Rolodex. So, and, you know, these two parties represent corporate power. They represent the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower's warned us about. They represent a militarized foreign policy. They represent Washington bailing out Wall Street. They represent distorted public budgets. They're not all the same, the Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats are much better on Medicare, for example, and Social Security preservation. But in the real currents of concentrated power, the two parties have been dialing so long for the same corporate money for their campaigns that they are increasingly alike. Trump is setting himself up for a big betrayal of his backers. And the first test that we're going to put on his table is the minimum wage restoration for 30 million workers, many of whom voted for Trump, who are making less today than workers made in 1968, adjusted for inflation to today, which would be $11 an hour. So 30 million workers, many Walmart workers, McDonald's workers, are making less than $11 an hour. And that's going to be put right on Trump's desk. Remember, Trump first said when he was asked that Americans were overpaid. He didn't want a higher minimum wage. And then he sort of stumbled himself back into rejecting that statement. But he didn't put a figure on what he wants. But that's what the Democrats should do in the Congress right from the get-go. 30 million workers getting a raise, raising more consumer demand, creating more sales, more jobs, and all the rest of it. And by the way, it isn't really a raise, technically. It's just a restoration, inflation adjusted. Now, some cities are going for $15 an hour, and that movement, talk about it's easier than we think, Joe.
Yeah.
That movement involved a few citizen groups, including ours, putting out material. It involved SEIU putting a few million dollars to have busloads of demonstrators before Walmart and McDonald's around the country. And lo and behold, one city after another and a state starting to raise the minimum wage above the frozen federal minimum wage of 7.25, including New York State, including Governor Cuomo. He changed his mind. I couldn't get him to talk about the minimum wage after he was elected. But look at him now. He wants $15 for food workers, et cetera. So it's a lot easier than we think, and it's important to keep repeating that, which this little book does, Breaking Through Power, because that cuts away the sense of powerlessness that people grow up in their educational experience. You can't fight City Hall. You can't take on the big boys. Once people have a sense of their power, and after all, they have the power in the Constitution. It's we the people, not we the corporations. Then everything can become possible.
Are you as worried as many on the left are about the Supreme Court?
Of course. He's got the nomination of six, seven judges that are as bad as Scalia. We have to then ask ourselves, well, who can stop it? Again, it's Senator Chuck Schumer. The Democrats can stop it. Listen, under Nixon nominated Judge Carswell. The Democrats rejected it. Nixon then nominated Judge Haynesworth. The Democrats rejected it. And then he nominated a very good judge, and they accepted it, Blackmun. Well, they also blocked Bork when I guess it was Reagan who nominated him. But then they stopped doing that, and they let Scalia come in, 98-0. How about that one? I was up on Capitol Hill begging some senators to, have just a protest vote. They wouldn't hear it. Then they crossed the aisle, and 11 Democratic senators got Justice Thomas confirmed, 52-48, under a Senate controlled by the Democrats. And then they let Roberts and Alito through. They wouldn't even let me testify against Roberts. So this is not a complaint that the Democrats can make credibly. They're hypocrites. They had the power to stop these people, but they didn't. Well, now they got the power still. They got enough votes to block any nomination to the Supreme Court by Donald Trump.
Have you talked to Jill Stein at all since the election?
No, I talked to her the day before the election. She did fairly well, actually. She got 1.2 million votes. Much better than she did in 2012, raised $3.5 million. But you know, if you don't get on the presidential debate corporation stage, which is funded by corporations and run by the two parties, someone like Jill Stein can't reach tens of millions of people. She's not a billionaire and put ads all over the country.
Right.
And that was Gary Johnson's problem too. He got 4 million votes. Which is certainly a lot more, four times more than the Libertarians got in 2012. Something's beginning to churn in the third party area.
I asked the question because I'm just interested because, you know, I mean, there were editorials all over yesterday of pointing to her, especially in Florida, if those votes had gone to Hillary Clinton and spoiler. And I was just wondering if since the same charge was leveled against you of whether she was seeking advice on how to deal with that.
No, I think she is ready for it. We have to get over this. If we have an equal right to run for election, then we're all trying to get votes from one another.
Right.
Then we're all either spoilers of one another or none of us are spoilers. People have to realize that. And a lot of these are liberals, Joe. They would never think of telling anybody that they disagree with across the street or in an auditorium, shut up. Because liberals are supposed to protect people's First Amendment rights, even if they disagree with them. Suddenly, when it gets inside the electoral arena, they're telling third-party candidates, shut up, because when you run for office, you're using the ultimate First Amendment, the free speech, petition, and freedom of assembly. And that's what I point out to my liberal friends. You're being hypocritical. Free speech outside the electoral arena. But no free speech. You're called the spoiler. You're harassed. Your petitioners are harassed getting signatures. Frivolous suits are filed against third parties by a major party like the Democrats. We had 24 lawsuits against us in 2004 in 12 weeks.
Mm.
12 weeks. Imagine, to drain our resources in the summer of 2004. We won most of them, but it's pretty tough. You know, you got to have lawyers all over the country and ask them to do pro bono. Very, very anti-democratic. That's why we call it a two-party tyranny. But more than that is that the media responsibility here goes to an area that very few people discuss. The mass media froze out the citizen community from this election, symbolized by the Sunday talk shows, Meet the Press and Face the Nation, etc., who never put on citizen leaders who actually have accomplished things to improve the country. The citizen leaders could have corrected the mistakes of the candidates. They could have defended their regulations from attack by the candidates who want to deregulate. And most important, they could have broadened the number of subjects and topics that the candidates running for president and for the Congress would have had to address. Like, nobody talked about auditing the Pentagon. Pentagon's violating the law. It doesn't have audited books, according to the Congress. It's been violating the law since 1992. That comes in at 98%. I mean, do you know anybody in this country except Lockheed and Raytheon that doesn't want the $660 billion full of waste and corruption and the contracting and audited? And that was never discussed. The civil liberties encroachments of the Patriot Act were not discussed. Cracking down on corporate crime wave, reported by the mass media regularly, that was not discussed. Even the whole issue of crony capitalism, which Gary Johnson and Jill Stein raised, that was not discussed. Simple consumer protection, putting the federal cop on the corporate crime beat, not discussed. Restrictive labor laws, obstructing unions, worst laws in the Western world, like the Taft-Hartley Act, never discussed. On and on. Militarization of foreign policy, never discussed. Why aren't we waging peace and having treaties for cyber warfare and for the Middle East, etc.? Never discussed. That's what happens when you freeze out the civil community. When elections are corporatized, commercialized, sensationalized, and they freeze out the civil community, that's like putting democracy off limits from elections.
Ralph Nader is a consumer advocate and author of the new book, Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than We Think. He's also our conscience, I believe. And Mr. Nader, it's an honor and a pleasure to speak to you as always. And I hope you'll come. We didn't even get to talk about the new book. Hopefully you'll come back and talk about that.
Yeah, I'd love to. It's a fable, Animal Envy, and it is for all ages. And it raises the great issue of the mutual reliance of human beings with the natural and the animal kingdom. It's got a lot of humor. It's got a lot of science in it. And it's always good to talk with you, Joe. It's always good to be on public radio where serious talk can continue. And I wish you good luck, and I wish your listeners to continue supporting with their donations, WAMC.
A great pleasure, sir. Thank you very much for your time. We'll talk soon.
You're welcome.
Again, Ralph Nader, author of the new book, Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than We Think. It's published by City Lights. We'll be back after this.